look, when you are a woman leading big change, so much so that you're changing the de facto mindset of what, you know, like you said, what the solution should be, what the different way of thinking should be, you're going to get pushback. And I'm sure we're going to talk about how it's different for women. The approach that I take that I've now used over and over again since kind of the dawn of time, and now, you know, other folks have been using it, is number one, what should the disruption be? And the easiest prompting questions for that is, what could be different and what could be better? That is a very important step because it takes ego out of it.
Just stop it. The run-of-the-mill, cheesy, humdrum bullshit status quo just tires me out. What fascinates me are the industry disruptors, the superhuman frontiersmen or women with arrows in their backs who go through hell to achieve their goals. They'll go through anything to make it. They bathe in hell and high water, a cut above. They're intolerant to mediocrity, the status quo, and yet they're the nicest people you'll ever meet. This is Disruption Interruption. Join me as we meet and learn from those mavericks, rebels, and business leaders that aren't afraid to piss off the establishment in order to make radical change for good. This show is sponsored by Johto PR, the disruptive anti-PR firm that murders your competition with cinder blocks and cyanide. Welcome back, everybody, to Disruption Interruption. I'm your host, KJ, and we're here today to talk to another badass industry leader that has steered off the lame, tired path of the status quo. Now, this guest today is a tech maverick and an influencer with an extensive background in corporate executive roles, as well as she's a sought-after board member and influencer. Her influence extends beyond the boardroom as she writes for prominent publications like Entrepreneur, The Guardian, and Forbes, and much more. She's a beacon for women empowerment and aims to inspire women to recognize and harness their own power. Through global initiatives and effective gender equity programs, she actively engages in disengaging people from the status quo, my favorite, and fostering real change. In this episode, we're going to dive into the critical issue of unconscious bias in the tech industry, especially within the work tech sector. Explore the underrepresentation of women in tech and unravel the potential biases that could emerge if AI tutors are crafted by a homogenous population. Join us in welcoming the author of the best-selling book, Disruptors, Success Strategies from Women Who Break the Mold, and the fractional CMO at LeapGrate, Dr. Patty Fletcher.
Hi, it's so good to be here. And I have to tell you, you're coming with me everywhere I go.
Okay, good.
Best description of me and my work I've ever heard. It's great to be
here. I'm so happy to have you here. You know, we hear all of this stuff and these narratives and these controversial narratives just for clickbait about what we're going to talk about today. But we're going to talk about it from a humanity side and a solution-oriented side today, which I absolutely love. But before we get into there, you know, I don't have that many women on my podcast, mm-hmm. right? Women disruptors. There's a lot of women disruptors, but they're not willing to say they're disruptors. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of conversations with them. They're like, oops, I don't know. But you're out there. You wrote a book about it. You're in your face. Mm-hmm. What's your ingredient for disruptive innovation?
Yeah, it's such a great question. And I do feel like more and more women are starting to, especially the, you know, the younger generation, because they're so marked by being different. But for me, it's pretty simple, right? You talk about status quo and you talk about disruption. And so for me, disruption in my own, you know, secret ingredient to doing that, disruption is when I see a status quo that's inefficient, costs too much money, takes too much time, it's ineffective, right? Doesn't achieve the desired outcomes. And that's what Silicon Valley would typically say why I'm doing my startup kind of like thing, innovation. But me, I add on, as most female disruptors do, the last bit, it's also inequitable. It doesn't positively serve the greatest number of people. And I can't not create a new status quo that does. I was born that way. So how do I do it? Look, when you are a woman leading big change, so much so that you're changing the de facto mindset of what, you know, like you said, what the solution should be, what the different way of thinking should be, you're going to get pushback. And I'm sure we're going to talk about how it's different for women. Mm-hmm. The approach that I take that I've now used over and over again since kind of the dawn of time, and now, you know, other folks have been using it, is number one, what should the disruption be? And the easiest prompting questions for that is, what could be different and what could be better? That is a very important step because it takes ego out of it. And now as a result, I talk about the content and context versus the person, which you never want to do in DEIB. You never want to.
You know, you just encapsulated and summarized sort of like women in general, like what could be better, right?
Yes.
What was the other one?
What could be different?
What could be different? Yes. Taking the ego out of it.
Yes.
A lot of women, especially that I speak to, that are leaders, they don't mind, you know, they're quiet disruptors, which is totally fine.
Yeah.
But I do think, you know, we have a duty to educate, right?
Yeah.
And from talking to you before, I know like what could be better and what could be different has been a mantra that's guided you.
Yes, it has. Like,
all your life.
It has. And just if I can add in, so there's two other things, and particularly for women. So one of the reasons we stay quiet is we tend not to be listened to, right? But here's the other thing. We have been so conditioned to be perfect, right? Instead of progress. We've been so conditioned to be able to do something only because we have the experience versus the potential. And that stuff just gets conditioned into your head, the whole imposter syndrome and all of that. So the next phase of that is in what will the naysayer say? Because when you are disrupting someone's status quo that they are comfortable in or thriving in,
there's typically a vested interest, right?
For sure. But you and I both know the loudest disruptors or the largest naysayers are the ones in your head. So you take the power away and you list all the stuff out. Just do it. So that way you address it and you're ready. And the final piece is in what will you say to the naysayers? And that to me is always the thing that keeps me going, because the world would be different in this way.
It's a really good point. It's almost like, you know, my background is in crisis management. So what would we do, right? Part of our strategies was like, we would list out all of the counterpoints that we would get, and then we would figure out how to control those way before they ever happened. 90% of them never happened, but I do believe a well-drilled ship does not sink. Right?
Absolutely.
It's probably the same way.
Yes. Yes, it is. And, you know, it really helps you. The other thing that, you know, really helps you with all of this is it's very easy to get derailed, right? Because you're going to talk to a lot of people with a lot of ideas and a lot of whatever. And there's a naysayer component to that, which is the way you're doing it or the way that you're going is not right. Mm-hmm. And so being able and ready to have those conversations, it kind of takes the power away from them. Because like you said, you have all of the different scenarios that you are ready to mitigate on. And it'd be great if they didn't, but I'm not scared to go talk to people about it because I know I have a plan.
Well, that's cool. And that's part of the disengaging that you're talking about, right? And I think also disarming, because I think without fixed ideas or false ideas and alone, without collective think, I think people are very different.
They are
alone. And they're actually more accepting.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
So let's talk about this unbiased conscious in the work tech sector, right?
Yeah.
And let's break it down a little bit. How do you define work tech sector?
Yeah. So work tech for me is like, for example, you know, like an SAP SuccessFactors, or there are a few different spectrums, right? There is actually like thousands of different companies. And so when I think about kind of the clamshell, you know, the sectors of it. So there's the kind of baseline, the functional thing. What do I need to run my talent in HR department? That's everything from what we call core HR, payroll, benefits, right? The things that are highly regulated. And then you have the talent side, and that's things around talent acquisition, right? So who gets hired, who gets developed, who gets promoted, that's all in what's called an HCM solution, an end-to-end. It's part of the business, and those things connect into things like payroll and planning and all of that, you know, fun stuff. Mm-hmm. On top of that, so when I started, it was core HR and it was on-prem, right? And it's grown through the years with SaaS, with data. You're looking at things like workforce planning. You're looking at, do I have the competencies I need? Do I have succession plans? All of that. then built on top are the appization of HR has been incredible, but it's anything from health and well-being as part of the employee experience to, you know, the kind of data sets that are on top to specific learning and development needs. So that's all of work tech. It is all about what supports the organization to employ people. And by the way, most HR setups are for employees only, which is something we should talk about why that's a problem versus the entire population who determines if I'm successful or not in, you know, achieving that. And there are regulatory reasons for that. I get it. But it's also from the experience of being an employee, right? What is it like to work here? Am I enabled? Am I enabled to do my job and create the impact? Am I enabled to, many of us, you know, work virtually or even in an office, am I able to create that kind of team atmosphere through the connection tools? So that's what work tech is.
Got it. So in a nutshell, if I'm like, I hate to use the word dumbing it down, but like giving a synopsis or paraphrasing what you said, the work tech, the whole complete picture is caring for the human capital.
Yes.
And all of the pieces around that and what influences that in an organization. Is that right?
So it is a little bit, right? So make no mistake that an HR department's job is the company, right? Mm-hmm. So protect the company, but it is also to make sure you have the talent in place you need to execute on the strategy, whatever that looks like. And in order for that talent to be right, in order for that talent to have the experience so much so that they're engaged, and we know that we live in a world where, you know, the vast majority, 85, 90% are pretty actively disengaged, it's quite important, but that they have those tools that they need. So yes, it's to care for the human capital, and probably a good thing to do is to define human capital.
Yes. Okay, so let's define human capital, and then just walk me through it. I'm thinking of my listeners. So define human capital for me.
Yeah, and it's so important. I have to tell you, even people in HR don't know what it means.
Oh, right? I know.
You're not.
I know.
Right. So essentially, it is what I, the human being, bring to the table in exchange for the money and the equity you give me. So my capital is anything from the education and what I learned from that education, my skills that I bring to the table, the competencies I bring, and guess what else? It is the potential I have for your organization. It's the people I know, the stuff I know how to do, and what I can deliver for you today and for tomorrow. That's what you and I trade on when we get paid from someone. So that's what capital is. And so when you look at that point of view, you start to go, where the hell is the human? Right? So it's really important that we understand those two things. And I love the term human capital because it gives me power to say, wait a minute, I think this company needs me more than I need them.
Well, it is capital. You're leveraging this to execute strategy for the organization, right? But it's an asset. You need to take care of it.
Right. But the thing is, there's a human being attached.
Right.
And so in tech, a lot of times we get hired for the stuff we can do versus the person we are.
Right.
And, like, that's a problem. And that's why DEIB can also be a challenge.
Right. And so you have education, skills, competencies, potentiality.
Exactly.
And then the whole person. Or does that equal the whole person?
So the whole person, what we have to remember is what a company is paying for are the impact you can make directly to like their objectives. But the person is also a person outside of the office, right? It's outside. So the new generation, the millennials, which are not new, right? I think you're part of that generation, but millennials and Gen Z in particular are expecting lifestyle pieces. So now,
totally.
Regardless, by the way, it's not just a US thing, it's global, right? So things around health and well-being, but also with my family, right? What are those things I should do? And so that's kind of where HR is right now. They're like the orchestra piece is the human capital. So they have always had, whether it was more efficiency HR stuff or now human capital, HR is in a really tough place. So business leaders overall, but the business of people folks are in a tough place because they're still getting the edit around efficiency and effectiveness of I want this puppy, right? This whole thing of the organizational people to be sequenced and predictable and sing from the same song sheet. But those of us in innovation-based industries, which is pretty much everybody, if you're not working on a shop floor, and even then you need to, is, but I want the innovation of a jazz band. And that's where the human piece comes in, because we mm-hmm. know it's important to invest in lifestyle and those other things that's going to fuel me so that I'm not depleted and burnt out and disengaged.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really important. And I look at this ever since COVID. Like, yeah. I've known this in my whole industry because we deal with so many verticals of tech that everything's interrelated and interdependent. You see something going on over here, but that's because this happened over here, and that, you know, it's this chain reaction that most people don't see. But I think everybody got a glimpse of this on COVID, all the way down to a personal level. We're all interrelated. We're interconnected. There is no separation from, you know, my own self-determinism, from my group self-determinism, like, and how I work, you know, how I do well, like in my group in business is how I feel personally, right?
Yes.
So I think maybe HR is having a tough time with this because they've siloed it for so long.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They have. And, you know, it's interesting when I look at HR, when I first started in this in the late 90s, the conversation had already been going on around how do we get a seat at the table? And it was about at that time, kind of just past it, when the role of money, finance started changing. It went from, you know, controller bean counter to CFO who kind of sits on the right hand of God, right? They're, you know, where do we invest and divest, which the financial fluency and the financial story and roadmap. So it was very strategic. We're going to take money here and put it over there because, you know, this is the growth vector that we're going to go after. And this one is, you know, too mature. So it was like, okay, HR, if you can kind of, that's when human capital started coming in, right? So if you can then take that same role, but we just talked about money resources, what about the human component of resources? And it just never quite got there for many, many reasons, mostly because the people around them were still talking dollar bills.
Mm-hmm.
HR was then having to go more the, you know, productivity, whatever, but it was always fuzzy. And
don't you think that's generational?
Oh, totally.
It's like a generational like mindset that has, it's a generational timeline too.
Yes. And that's why it's exciting now, right? Yeah. It's so transactional before. I give mm-hmm. you this, you do that. And now it's transformational, right? It is, you know, first of all, everybody wants to have a purpose and, you know,
beautiful though.
It's great, but we have to understand it's not a family or community, right? I've read something that I love, which is you want the dream team, right? That's what it is. But they have to be bought in absolutely to something bigger. The problem is most employee experiences don't equate to that. So it's, you know, it's a huge issue. But yeah, it is absolutely generational. We are seeing the changes. But the other thing that HR is starting to look at and employ the tools are, right? So I have, you know, I've worked in pretty much every function that there can be, but marketing has been more where my executive, you know, stuff besides the future work stuff I do. And so now HR, they're having to not only be technologists and business people, but they're having to be marketing people. And what they get from that is kind of what you're talking about is, hey, there are these new segments coming in. And with AI, I have to understand different things about them and hopefully AI can help me. So whereas before it was all about how does HR think about automation with their business line people to have people do things more effectively and efficiently, this other piece with AI is a cognitive shift. So how is HR going to help the organization change and be able to use technology for things like neurodiversity and whatever, but also to kind of replace certain levels of the business with machines who can then ask humans to think at a much higher level because of the data output. So they now have the biggest opportunity because if they don't figure that out, that business will go out of business.
Wow. So how are they? Or how should they? Or how do you see this playing out
right now? Yeah. And the truth is nobody has figured it out. So if I were them, I would take, you know, kind of a multi-pronged view, right? So for me, when I think about the future of work, I think about it along a few different levels. The first thing is I study what is going on in the industry.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So someone like an Amazon is a great example, right? So the Amazon distribution centers, have you ever gone on a tour of one?
No.
So like you will geek out. So it's just really cool. So you go there and you see a place, you know, that's like 2 miles long, right? So mm-hmm. 40,000 people literally working there. And they have like, you know, I don't know, a 20th of that, because they have redefined what a warehouse does and looks like. the machines, the reason we get stuff so fast, and the machines are going, there's like they get the thing automatically fed from the order that we do, and then boom, they go. And the only thing the human does is kind of package it and, you know, simplifying it. And they'll probably like kill me for saying this because it's not true, but you get what I mean, right?
I did a whole distribution tour of Sysco. Remember the food company years ago?
Yes,
and
yes.
They were ahead of their time during that. Yes, so I can imagine it's similar.
It's amazing, right? And so
amazing.
It's amazing. And so what happens then, right? And then, of course, you know, they did the whole delivery thing. But me as a human, I'm going to make different kinds of decisions. So I look at stuff like that and I think, okay, the company I work with now, LeapRate, has that similar kind of thing with the use of automation for ERP implementations, which, oh my God, that's a world that has to be disrupted. But then, right, so I'm looking at technology trends, but I'm also looking at social government kinds of trends. And, you know, what if we do break out into a world war? Like, what is that going to look like? Right. So looking at all of those things in which the organism of an organization lives, what's impacting that? And that's, you know, consolidation, all of those things. So then I say, okay, great. So based on an organization who is facing, everybody's going to be an AI company. Period, end of story. Your world is AI, my world is AI. Like, gone is digital marketing. Like, we're kind of moving past that, but it's going to fit everywhere, and it already has. So based on all of that, in order for a company to achieve its goals, it's therefore, what is the future of leadership? What are the types of leaders we need to have? So probably the first thing is, how do we figure out how to have leaders, like you said, with a growth mindset, where they are driven by curiosity versus I have the solution before understanding the problem, because that's what we're going to innovate, right? Looking at problems in different ways. And as
you have to learn and you have to relearn, well, you have to learn, then you have to unlearn, then you have to relearn.
Yes, exactly. So what's the type of leader that can do that and still keep people to this vision, still keep them organized and motivated? There's a management piece, and then there is a, I'm going to sweep the debris out of the way piece so you can be successful. So what does that look like? It's right. So future of industry, therefore future of leadership. Then the next one is therefore the future of work. What are the things, and technology is the number one driver of disruption, right? Those are all the industrial revolutions. We know that. So what does therefore the future of work look like? And that Amazon one is a great example of one part of their business. And every industry will have that, as long as that future of leadership says we have to absolutely deal with efficiency and effectiveness and equity, but we have to deal with it at the human level. What does it mean when someone's going to construct meaning differently? Because they have information that they would have taken, you know, a week to do, and it's boom, already given to them. Now what, right? So the critical thinking component, all of that, what does the culture need to be? And then once we figure that out, it's then therefore, what is the future of how work gets done?
How do you unlearn? How does HR unlearn what they need to unlearn to learn, right? The equity and human aspect.
Yes, exactly. So they are absolutely the most incredible people, right? HR people are incredible, but they have been pushing up Boulder up the hill because number one, it needs to start probably with education, right? So most folks who will go for an HR degree probably want to be in HR because it is a very interesting place, but we're still teaching them the old ways of doing things, right? And that's not helpful. Because
I mean, you're talking about the, it's just like STEM, right? We've got to start early in education. You and I both go,
Right? So there's that. Then the next piece is, I love the name of your show, right? Yes, it is amazing. Disruption. What is it? It's disruption.
Interruption.
Disruption, right?
Disruption, interruption. Yeah.
So what do you think, right? The challenge with unconscious bias, which is what you're talking about, right? It is. And when we think about how do you get to unconscious bias and what it leads to. So first, you know, all this stuff starts when you're like 3 years old, but it, you know, the cycle continues, right? So the first thing is like, you know, you start to kind of go, okay, people are telling me if this happens, then that happens. Okay, great. And so the next thing that comes is kind of this stereotype, because every time you see this and then that happens, you're like, okay, self-fulfilling. I got that. Okay. And then what happens is it turns into an unconscious bias, because you just, your brain is automatically trapped to, if this happens, then this will happen. And therefore here's the solution. And then here's what the people, blah, blah, blah. The final thing is discriminatory behavior, most of which is unconscious. We see that in the systemic bias. So the thing is change, right? So when it comes to anything, unconscious bias, learning, unlearning, change doesn't happen from the top down, because people do not change when you tell them to change. They change when you enable them to change. The only thing that stops unconscious bias in their tracks is decision interruption. So what can we do, right? So self things, if I am, job descriptions were like a thing we worked on years ago. We first started using machine learning to detect, prevent, and eradicate unconscious bias from the workplace. And so what would happen with the job description? If you've hired anybody, chances are you copied and pasted, right? And you put it out there. And so the analysis way back then, this is old news now, right? But the analysis way back then was like, wait a minute, for this tech role, it's basically like, we're going to have pizza and ping pong, right? It was a big culture. And I'm this middle-aged woman, really not interested.
No, right? Yeah.
Right? So it was that kind of thing. And then we went to blind resumes, because we knew that if someone saw this address or had this name, right, they're going to get canceled out, versus someone with this address and this name, and oh, by the way, went to this school, it's perfect. So what happened then? Why do we think that this is the right kind of candidate? Why do we think using resumes in this manner works? It's essentially stopping and asking themselves why. So how can HR do that? Go to what we call the HCM lifecycle. It starts with applicants. Who applies, who gets hired, who gets promoted, who gets paid, right? Those key decision points where unconscious bias matters the most. And you ask yourself the why questions, the systemic why questions, the practice why questions.
And when you say the why questions, like what are those? Like you say, how could things be better? How could they be different? But right. What are the why?
Yep. So let's talk about one, right? So let's talk about, let's talk about board seats.
Let's do it.
Yeah, let's do it. So board seats. So typically between the ages of about 40 and 49, right? It's probably a little bit younger because of the disruption culture over in the Silicon Valley. And, you know, you can join a board once you have a startup, but I'd say it's still pretty much the same in most of the world. So 40 to 49 is the age when you start to get earmarked for, wow, this person's going to make a great public company board member. And it makes sense, because by the time you're 40, you've had a lot of, you know, kind of growing from within, right? So you've had a lot of experience. You've probably experienced failure, which is what we want you to do.
That's how you learn.
Your responses,
it's really
right?
How you learn. Yeah.
It's how you learn, but it's also how you respond to that failure.
Mm-hmm.
Do you take that and do something, right? And then the final piece, and let's not kid ourselves, when it comes to boards, right? It's 100% referral. Don't believe others. But when, as a result of that, right, it's you're brought on a board because of who you know, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if it's like someone who needs a regulation and whatever, you know, in the EU, because there's all sorts of stuff there, you're probably, and if you have a gap there, you're going to bring people on because they know the regulators and all of that. Okay. But here's the problem. The problem is between Dr. Bryzendine, and I think it was like Female Brain or Left Brain or whatever, in her book, talked about the fact that between the ages of 40 and 49, that might work great for a man. He's had no interruption in his thing. He didn't leave to go have babies, but guess what he doesn't face? Whether you are a woman who's in the sandwich generation, like I am, right? I take care of kids, take care of my parents, or you have children, or you don't at all. That is the time when your cup is freaking full. It is unbelievable. You're going through biological changes. Like you literally can't take on much more. And what I learned, not only being a 50-year-old woman, but about 20 years ago when I did my dissertation on female board members in tech and life sciences, the most tech-intensive industries at the time, was that as a woman, when you turn 50, everything changes because you stop defining your life based on the role you play in the lives of others, and instead based on the role you want to play in your own life. And we see it all the time. I'm one of those people where you go, wait a minute, I want for the rest of my life, want to be able to focus on this versus that. So why not ask, why do we think it's between the ages of 40 and 49? Who does that exclude, right?
You have to be so curious to do that, Patty.
Yes, But then it's also, but I don't have an answer, by the way, for how can you measure curiosity? Trust me, I'm working on it. But you have to be. So what does that mean? You're going to have to bring in advisors who ask you the question, right? You're going to have to be able to put in training around how do you do decision interruption, but you also have AI already at the ready so that when you're putting a program together around, you know, succession planning and the people who decide that, quite frankly, are middle managers, right? They're the ones who decide kind of who gets up there. You literally have a prompt that says, without blaming and shaming, right? It is about helping them interrupt their decision and go, okay, so based on the corporate, you know, kind of, we want these kinds of people with these kinds of competencies, demonstrated curiosity, which is the only thing they can do, in these kinds of ways, you know, and by the way, we are fully committed so much so that we have set a thing around neurodiversity, around gender, around, you know, whatever, LGBTQ, around race, around veterans, and it's not fulfilling that. What about this person, right, who's done these projects and done these things? And that's the great thing about tech is you literally have a thumbprint for somebody. That's decision interruption. When it comes to HR, it goes back to you're going to hire a consultant to come in. But you need a consultant that's less about the old school. And I'm not going to name names, but we all know who they are, right? And as you know, I might call them old, male, stale, pale, right? They all went to the same schools, the same bus, you know, went up to Harvard, picked them all up and, you know, brought them to the big boutiques. Instead, you need folks who really understand that transformational value and opportunity with AI. HR deserves AI tools that can really ask them questions around the systemic ways that they are translating that culture of we want all the best innovators, we want this kind of workforce culture, we want people to make decisions and behave in this way. And yet the thing is going to look end to end in your, you know, kind of HCM lifecycle and say, wait a minute.
Proactively change a culture. A culture is made up of the mores and the ethnics and the thoughts and the feelings and, you know, the customs and so forth of a certain group of people. And when we have that diversity, right, we start creating a different culture.
Yes.
Right.
Well, here's the problem with that. So we do need all different voices, right? So you just hit the other one on the head. You can't make decisions in a silo. And that's what you said, right? Which is exactly how this is, because it's harder to fact check yourself. It's harder to disrupt your own decision. You do need people from all different voices and not just, you know, the typical DEIB, diversity, equity, inclusion, belonging pieces, but also from a functional perspective. Right. So a lot of times what you hear from someone in the business line is like, HR doesn't help me at all. Right. And so it's because they're worried that HR doesn't understand. If I'm head of growth, I got to hit my revenue targets. Right. Like I got to be able to move stuff around
right,
and meet my market demands. Right. Like whatever that looks like. So that is important. But what I have come to realize over the years, diversity, like maybe you're right. So diversity is essentially bean counting. These people in this segment, there's number. The typical way a company achieves that is through talent acquisition, which is such a shame, right? Because that then like totally takes the pressure off of middle managers to actually make different kinds of decisions. So they're not rewarded for doing that. And that's the other piece, by the way, decision, like you have to reinforce those kinds of new ways of doing your culture. So that's where they start. The problem is those women don't tend to stay. And women who grow up in your organization and finally hit the executive levels most likely leave because they were bruised and battered to get there. They have the title. Now they go somewhere else. So what I've come to realize, and it's like, oh, well, we'll get the diversity and then we'll have the inclusion. Inclusion actually needs to be the leader because inclusion is really that culture. Not only am I inviting you to the table, I'm actually welcoming you to the table and I'm going to add in equity. You are someone whose experience is different than the person next to you, which is very, very hard. Remember, innovation versus orchestra, but HR now has the tools, thanks with technology and AI, to kind of theme out their people. You know, here are the ways they make decisions based on all of these different factors, so that each person, regardless of what segment they fit into, can look in the mirror and say, I belong here, versus the head of culture, the CEO pointing at you and saying, you belong here and you don't.
Amen.
So, yeah.
Mic drop moment right there. Yeah. Mic drop moment. What are some like educational like books, tools like that HR can start really studying to yeah. like what you recommend to yeah. learn and unlearn and relearn?
Yeah. So I would start at that industry level. And, you know, one of the best sources for stuff like this is quite frankly, the World Economic Forum. And right. And so if you don't know who they are, it's this nonprofit organization that essentially follows the money around the globe. Right. Mm. Where is the money going? So they're looking always at, you know, forward thinking things like climate change and all of that. But they have mm-hmm. a huge piece. And they're the ones who came up with, what was it right after COVID, like the Great Reset, right? They're the ones that came up with that topic because of the implications to, you know, the global kind of money flow and, you know, where it was growing and where it wasn't. So I would start there because they're the ones who bring together where money is going to be made, because trust me, that's where the board is looking, right?
And yep.
it's going to govern all of those strategic decisions the CEO is going to make in order to get there.
Right.
That's what they're looking at, where the puck is going money-wise, but they're also bringing in the technology piece. They're bringing in the geography piece. They're bringing in the gender piece. Like, they truly have all the financial data and market movement pieces there. So I would start there.
Okay, good. That's a lot of data.
That's a lot of data.
Yes.
And then, so I'm just trying to think of accessible things, right? So then the next level down is that future of leadership. And, you know, Korn Ferry's done an incredible job on that. They've really, you know, kind of built out beyond recruiting and really focus in on the different aspects of leadership in terms of competencies and, you know, what does it mean to lead today versus tomorrow based on kind of the changing dynamics. Harvard Business Review, you know, the typical kind of things. But I would also follow people like Josh Burson or Lori Reutemann or me, right? Like folks who are self-described kind of leadership futurists. And I would look at it from a business lens. So I just talked about a bunch of business people. But then there are people from the human lens who focus in, HR needs to move from the what to the how and the why. It is less important about, like, you know this in your world. It's less important what people think. It's more important understanding how they think and why they think that way.
Yes, exactly.
Right?
That's so what are two other references for the human side? Just two.
Yep. Dr. Edie Weiner, who's going to talk about, you know, who gets to be successful and, you know, what does it take? And then I would say David Pierce Snyder, because he does such a good job of bringing in, quite frankly, the infobesity that still exists today. And what does it mean to be successful because of it versus despite it?
Okay. That's a lot of great data. Patty, you're so passionate about this. What do you do outside of your like disruptive you know, decision interruption? What are your crazy passions?
Yeah, it's so funny. My daughter, who's like 23, does a newsletter for the program she's in for her master's degree. And she's like, now we're going to talk about hobbies. What's your hobby? I'm like, I don't know. So it's awful. So like the usual, I love traveling, whatever. But the truth is, like, what really fuels me is this topic and it's women, right? So I write, you know, working on turning my book into a docuseries, some good stuff there, but I'm also starting to write novels. But really what I truly most enjoy is bringing women together. And I love it. I do. I love it, right? Anything from, you know, supporting the politician who I support and bringing folks there to I'm Armenian, so really serving my Armenian community. I am someone who cannot stand still. I am someone who likes to help people achieve what they want to achieve, particularly if they are the underdog.
That's awesome. That's lovely.
And of course, my family and all that, right?
Of course. Yes, you're a giver for sure. Okay, so how do people get a hold of you, Patty?
Sure. So my website, which is drpattyfletcher.com, it's DR, don't worry, enough to spell it all out. And those are also my handles on LinkedIn, on Instagram, and on Facebook, Dr. Patty Fletcher. And you can go ahead and follow me there. When you comment or reach out to me, I always respond.
Yep, you do. You are very gracious in that aspect. All right, Patty. So food for thought. What is a nugget of truth that you want to share with our listeners before we end off?
Yeah, it's going to be just not a great truth. I just want to reiterate, if you cannot figure out the next version of the business of people, switching more to cognitive versus just the skills that they bring. If you do not focus in on that, you will not be in business in a very short period of time. And AI is your way there, because AI is all about how the machine interacts with the human, not how the human interacts with the machine, which is what the last, you know, automation piece was. So my thing is, whether you are a business leader, a CEO, or head of HR, because everyone's job is the business of people, you want to use that to tap into what motivates people to bring the best version of impact that they want to bring to the world. And also remember this, whether it's COVID or anything else, the erosion of culture is real. If your company eroded, it's because you didn't have the culture in place to enable people to look in the mirror and say, I belong here.
Wow. Talk about decision interruption. Patty, thank you.
Thank you. Great combo.
Yes. All right, guys, that's a wrap. And if you learned something today, which I know you did, tell someone about this podcast and tell people to go disrupt their markets and their decisions with a tidbit from this show. Thanks for listening to Disruption Interruption, where we transform lives, change all kinds of behavior, alter economics, and never accept the status quo. Ciao for now.
Because we live in a highly litigious society, with America being one of the top litigious countries in the world, here's our legal disclaimer. This advice is not intended to be a substitute for professional public relations or legal advice. Do not disregard seeking professional legal healthcare or financial advice, or delay seeking professional PR or legal advice because of something you have heard here. Contact an attorney to obtain advice on any particular legal issue or problem. Use of this podcast or our website or any of its social media or email links do not create an agency-client relationship between JOTO PR and the user.